Chapter 14. Somehow we'd done the impossible. Our small little band of warriors, soothsayer and companion animals, had fought through the fiercest creatures Tembori had at his disposal, and we were now ready to ascend the sacred cloudbrush tree. Hopefully, the great horn of ivory awaited us up in these branches, and hopefully its mighty call would bring the legendary land dragons back into action. Yeah, it had been a strange couple of days.
The Mirak should be able to climb these trees without much effort,
Batari explained, as she saddled up on her oversized ant.
And we should go with him,
Ashanti joked.
As long as we keep our grip.
No worries here.
Jonas chuckled nervously as he wrapped his arms around the ant's thorax even tighter.
After all the turbulence I experienced riding with Ashanti, I don't even think the breath of a wind dragon could knock me from my mount.
Do you want to test that theory?
Swa Air offered with a giggle. I just rolled my eyes and turned to find my Mirak. The poor guy was about 100 feet away from our position, crouched down so his body was hidden by the tall grass of the savanna. His antennae were practically invisible amongst the swaying foliage, but his head was poked out just enough so I could see his eyes staring back at me. Come on, I called out to the giant ant. It's all safe now. Those terrible beasts are all gone. The Mirak poked his head up over the grass, looked around to make sure I was telling the truth, and then slowly began to approach. He arrived back at my position in no time, but he still looked a little spooked. His antenna twitched like they were tracking down radio waves as his eyes darted back and forth, and the Mirak's legs were shaking ever so slightly as he tried to figure out what all had just gone down. I reached out my hand, gave the Mirak a pat on his head, and tried to calm his nerves.
I thought all of the Miraks were battle-hardened,
Mira questioned as she watched the scene unfold.
Why does this one seem so skittish? He's one of the younger ones. Zakiyu figured it would be best to give Ben a Mirak that didn't have any sort of relationship with an individual Chero yet. That's why he seems a bit nervous. I'm sure he'll be an excellent battle mount in time. He just needs a bit more practice.
Well, he's about to get some practice at climbing. I chuckled as I hoisted myself up onto the creature's back. Mira, you want to catch a ride? Mira gave me a half-hearted smile as she approached the Mirak. Then the golden-scaled dragonkin warrior threw her right leg over the thorax of the ant, pulled herself up, and holstered her spear on her back. The next thing I knew, Mira's arms slid around my abdomen and grabbed me tight in her warm embrace. And the warrior's tight, fit body pressed up against my back as she nestled her chin against my right shoulder.
This wouldn't be the first ride you've given me,
Mira purred into my ear. It took every shred of my willpower to keep my erection at bay. As hot as it was to think of Mira's plump breasts bouncing up and down as she rode me ragged, it was kind of an awkward place to get a boner. It'd be like trying to ride a horse with one of those things. Sure, it was possible, but it would be very, very uncomfortable the entire time, for both the horse and the rider. And even more so for the stable hand, if they saw what was going on. Batari let out a whistle, and then her Mirak approached the trunk of the cloudbrush tree.
Will you and Swa Air act as our spotters?
The white-haired Chera woman asked Kandara.
Our ants are expert climbers, but it's always good to have a backup just in case accidents happen.
You just don't want us to get up to the horn first. You want to make sure you're the one to finally blow it and take all the credit for summoning the land dragons.
That's not it at all,
Batari gasped with wide eyes.
Tempori's tusk, do you really believe I'm that vain?
Do you really want an answer to that?
Swa Air snickered. Vanity has nothing to do with it. You're the queen mother of the Chero people. You should be the one to blow the horn. That's what Tembori would want.
No.
Ashanti shook her head and scoffed.
I don't think Tembori wanted us here at all. Hence the creepy, crawling creatures he had guarding the tree.
Either way, I agree with the Draco Rex. If this horn is truly the Great Horn of Ivory from your legends, then it is only appropriate the queen mother is the one to use it.
If it truly exists. That's the key point here.
You still don't believe?
Kandara questioned.
Even after we were attacked by monsters with Tembori's features?
I'll admit it does look promising.
The three-horned rhino woman shrugged.
But I'll believe in the Great Horn of Ivory when I see it with my own two eyes. You'll see it, all right. I have nothing but good feelings about this one. I don't know if good is the word I'd use. Not after nearly getting scuttled to death by a bunch of tusked insects.
Technically spiders are arachnids. I corrected the golden-scaled warrior, but she just huffed her warm breath against my hair in response. Kandara and Swa Air both hovered a few feet above us as Batari's Mirak started its ascent. Ashanti and Jonas were right behind the Chero leader, and then it was time for my Mirak to follow. The oversized ant sauntered up to the foot of the cloudbrush tree, and then hesitated for a brief moment. He let out a small, gurgled huff as he reached up with his front legs, hauled the right one back, and then slammed its pointed end into the trunk with a dull thud. The Mirak repeated the action with its left leg, and then his four lower ones. Before we knew it, Mira and I were completely perpendicular to the ground. Mira refused to let her tough woman persona crack even the slightest bit, but I felt her grip grow slightly tighter around my body as gravity took hold and tried to pull us down. Though I tried to fight the forces of physics for as long as I could, my body slightly leaned backward from the sudden lurch. Still, I was able to hold onto the Mirak with both my arms and legs as he started up the side of the tree. Surprisingly, the journey was as smooth as a ride down a freshly paved highway in a brand new vehicle. Though Mira and I both bounced along with the ant's movements, I didn't feel a lick of discomfort or motion sickness. Gravity tried to pull Mira and I off the Mirak, but our enhanced dragonkin strength allowed us to hold on to our ant like a baby koala bear. The closest comparison I could think of for this feeling was when you were on a roller coaster, and your ride vehicle was making its way up the first hill. Your mind is racked with anticipation, excitement, and fear all at the same time. This particular cloud brush was fairly tall, so the journey took quite a bit of time. We came to the first set of branches about 15 minutes into the journey, and Batari held up a hand to signal,
"Stop."
"What's going on?" I called up to the Chero leader.
"Did we find it already?"
"No, but this would be the first place to look. Everybody bring your Mirax up here, we'll try to formulate a plan."
Ashanti, Jonas, Mira, and I all rode up to the first thick branch of the tree, and then crawled onto it so we were once again parallel with the ground. Once we were all in place, we tried to figure out our next move.
"So, I'm pretty sure I already know the answer, but do you have any idea where this thing might be? I'm seeing a lot of branches in this tree."
For some reason, I just assumed the Great Horn of Ivory was going to be like one of those gigantic 10-foot-tall horns you'd see in a fantasy movie. I figured it would stand out like a sore thumb amongst the branches of the cloudbrush, but now that I looked up helplessly into the abyss of green and brown foliage, I realized I was sorely mistaken.
"There isn't anything more to the hint than what we've already worked out,"
the white-haired Chero woman sighed.
"But I do know what we're looking for. The Great Horn of Ivory will be fairly small, no larger than one of the Matrai. If the legend is correct, it'll be tied onto a branch and protected by a wrapping of fabric. Oh, fuck off, Mother Elves. It's going to take us forever to find this thing." "Maybe, but I promise it'll all be worth it in the end."
"If it worked,"
Ashanti reminded us all.
"If not, this whole trip would have been for nothing."
"Is she always this much of a downer?"
Swa'er asked telepathically, as he frowned at Ashanti.
"Not exactly."
Batari chuckled via the dragon bond.
"Ashanti just gets like this when she's afraid. She uses her sarcasm to try and mask the fact she's worried, but it just makes it all the more obvious to Rikori and me."
"I still don't get why she's being so negative. I'd much rather think happy thoughts."
"As would I, Swire."
The Queen Mother smiled.
"That's probably why the two of us ended up in this dragon bond together. We're two cheros in a mud hole."
Is that a good thing?"
Swire's yellow whiskers pulled back against his face as he raised his eyebrows.
"It's a very good thing,"
Batari reassured the Wind Dragon.
"I'll fly out and check the edges of the tree."
Kandara's voice cut through Batari's telepathic conversation.
"I can cover a lot more ground that way. Swire might be able to help out in that front, too."
"I sure can,"
the furry red dragon declared.
"Excellent."
Batari nodded.
"The rest of us will try to find it amongst the inner parts of the branches."
Everyone carefully dismounted their Miraks as Kandara and Swire took to the skies and went in opposite directions. At the same time, the rest of us began the search effort on our end. We all fanned out along the different sides of the tree trunk, fanned out so we were on different levels, and then scoured the branches for any signs of a small fabric-covered horn. It was just as difficult as I would have imagined. After nearly an hour of climbing, balancing out onto thinning branches, and navigating across limbs that looked like they would crack at the slightest bit of weight, my crew came up empty-handed.
"This is getting ridiculous,"
Ashanti huffed down from her perch above Batari.
"We've been searching forever, and we haven't even found a hint of where the horn could be."
"We can't give up yet,"
Batari shot back.
"This is the tree foretold in one of Tambori's legends. The Great Horn of Ivory is here somewhere."
"I'm starting to wonder if Ashanti is right,"
Jonas sighed as he placed his hands on his hips.
"Surely if Tambori went through all this trouble to protect this tree, he'd at least have a clue as to how to find the horn."
"I'd argue the opposite," I noted.
He hid the location within a riddle and then made sure his henchmen were guarding the damn thing. If anything, that's all the more evidence this horn is going to be a bitch to actually find.
But you'd think Tembori would leave us a clue?
Mira mumbled.
Why go to all this trouble to lay out a clear trail so far just to abandon it at the last step?
If you seek to find the dragon's prize, I whispered to myself, first you must look to Tembori's third eye. Wait a damn minute.
What if Tembori did leave us a clue and we just haven't found it yet?
What do you mean?
We've already established that Tembori's third eye is the eye in his name, but we haven't used the first part of the riddle whatsoever.
I'd say it's pretty straightforward.
Ashanti frowned.
We're looking for the dragon's prize, which is the Great Horn of Ivory.
Are you sure about that? Why would a dragon consider the horn a prize? It's a great prize to the Chero people, sure, but the dragons? What would they want with a horn that summons themselves?
That's actually a really good point.
The three-horned rhino woman admitted.
What could that be referring to, then?
Mira pondered aloud.
What could a dragon consider its prize?
A wild boar. At least that's what Tyrion and George would consider a worthy prize.
Gold? I guessed. Shiny gemstones.
Leaves.
Batari gasped as the epiphany hit her.
To the land dragon, the leaves of the cloud brush are the greatest things in all of existence.
I don't see how that really helps us. There are thousands of leaves on this tree.
But they aren't all delicacies to the land dragons.
Ashanti interjected.
The dragons would often stand up on their back legs, then use their long necks to reach up to the middle of the trees where their favorite leaves were located.
Why the middle?
Jonas scratched his chin, deep in thought.
They're the ones in the most ideal growing situation. The leaves at the very top of the trees are closest to the sun, so they're often scorched by the heat. Meanwhile, the leaves at the bottom hardly get any sun at all, so they're wilted, soggy. The ones at the center, though, those are crunchy, nutritious. If they find a flowering branch, hell, I've seen land dragons fight over flowering cloud brushes before.
That's it. I clapped my hands together in celebration. So, Air, new objective. See if you can find any branches with flowers on them. They'd be somewhere in the middle of the tree's foliage.
Oh, I'm always glad to find some pretty flowers, especially if they taste as good as Batari just said they do.
Just let us know if you find anything, I reaffirmed to the wind dragon, and then I let him do his thing. In the meantime, the rest of the crew and I continued our search on foot. We climbed up a few more branches until we were at the midsection of the cloudbrush's foliage. Then we began to survey each and every branch in the hopes that we'd find the tasty flowers the Chero women had mentioned. Thankfully, we didn't have to search for very long.
I found some! Oh, goodness, they're even more beautiful than I could have imagined.
Don't lose focus, buddy. Where are these things?
I can see you down below,
the furry red dragon explained.
If you come up about 6 branches and then go over 3 or 4 limbs to the left, you should be able to see what I'm seeing.
6 up, 3 or 4 over, I announced to the rest of the group. Let's check this out. Maybe it was just because we were all exhausted from the fight with the Maitreus, or maybe it was because we were all tired of searching for this damn horn. Either way, the climb up those 6 branches felt like 100, and by the time I reached the spot where I needed to be, my arms and legs both ached, and I was huffing up a storm. However, we weren't anywhere near done yet. My crew and I jumped across the branches 3 times before we turned to the right and were greeted by an over-enthused Swa'er. The little wind dragon hovered all the way down at the end of the branches with a massive smile on his face and eyes that were as wide as saucers, yet glimmered with excitement. A bit of drool slid from Swa'er's mouth as he stared at the flowers in front of him, and I couldn't help but smile when I saw their majesty. All along the branch were small, baseball-sized flowers that sprouted out of the wood. They had 6 leaves that were made up of 3 layers of double-ended petals laid across a bright blue pistil, and the leaves were primarily a faded light blue color, with a few speckles of silver spotted across their surface. One thing was for sure, they were beautiful, and I could see why they would attract the attention of a dragon. Swa'er wasted no time in getting to his taste test, and the wind dragon smacked his lips before he opened wide and snatched one of the flowers straight off its stem. We all watched curiously as Swa'er munched on the flora, gulped it down with an over-exaggerated gulp sound, and then let the flavor spread across his taste buds. Instantly, the little dragon's whiskers began to flicker with happiness, and a toothy grin spread across his face.
Oh, wow! These are the best things I've ever tasted!
Weren't you just born a few days ago? Jonas asked with a raised finger.
Oh, that doesn't change a thing.
The wind dragon shook his head.
Oh, I think I'm going to eat every single one of these little flowers. Well, other than 2 of them. I'll take those back to George and Tyrion so they can get a taste of just how great these are.
What about the horn?
Batari asked.
Do you see anything that indicates the horn is there?
Ashanti gasped and pointed to the branch above us.
Queen Mother, I think we found the Great Horn of Avery.
Sure enough, about halfway down the branch, tied up against the underside, was an item surrounded by dark brown fabric.
Could it be?
Batari's eyes filled with tears of joy as she approached the mystery object.
Is Tembori's glory smiling down upon us today?
We watched as Batari pulled out her sword spear, held it up to the rope, and then sliced it apart. She caught the wrapped item as it fell and held it close to her body as if it were the most precious cargo in the whole wide world. Finally, the Queen Mother returned to the rest of her teammates.
Is it the horn?
Mira implored.
Let's find out.
Batari gulped as she slowly began to unwrap the treasure. The Queen Mother's fingers trembled as they wrapped around the edge of the fabric, and I noticed Batari's bottom lip was firmly beneath her teeth. The poor woman was so nervous, and I didn't blame her one bit. This was the moment that would tell us if we'd successfully completed our mission, or whether we'd just wasted an entire day going on a wild goose chase. Batari took a deep breath before she threw open the corner of the package, and then the Queen Mother promptly let out a gasp of surprise. She now held a white instrument in her hand, one that was the size of a cornet. It appeared to have intricate carvings all along its body, carvings practically identical to the ones on the Chera women's bodies. The instrument had a narrow base that widened as it went on, until it opened up to a large, hollow circle. This had to be it. This had to be the Great Horn of Ivory.
I don't believe it. The legends are true. Of course they're true.
Batari smiled.
Tembori has guided us to the horn's location, and he deemed us worthy of the glorious prize.
If this is the horn, then there's only one thing left to do. Batari, would you like to do the honors? Batari's eyes lit up like Christmas lights at the mere thought of blowing the horn. The corners of her gray lips twisted up into an exuberant smile, and she wasted no time in getting to work.
It would be my pleasure. Actually, it's my duty as the leader of the Chero people. I shall blow this horn, and its mighty bellow will bring the land dragons back to us and restore our people's strength to what it once was.
Haroop!
Ashanti called out and raised her fist, even though she was the only other Chera woman present. Batari's grin grew even wider as she held the horn in her hands. She then made her way toward Swa'er, all the way out onto the branch as far as it would hold her weight. And we all watched with an excited hush as Batari then lifted the tip of the horn to her mouth, pressed it against her lips, and took a deep breath. Suddenly, a deep bellowing noise echoed across the entire savanna. On the surface level, it sounded just like a trombone, but I could hear the subtle differences in its tune. The sound waves seemed to reverberate chaotically in short, hurried bursts, and I instantly knew what it reminded me of. The horn was trying to imitate a dragon hum. Batari held her blast on the horn for several seconds, until she was forced to pause to take a breath. However, the second her lungs were back at full capacity, she unleashed another bellow on the Great Horn of Ivory. And when that one finally subsided, the Queen Mother took a step back.
Well, that was beautiful. If I were a land dragon, I would run here as fast as I could, and not just so I can enjoy these delicious flowers.
Was there some sort of message embedded in the sound?
Batari questioned her bondmate.
Oh, there was.
Swa'er nodded.
I didn't fully understand, but your horn imitated the sound we dragons make to let people know we are comfortable and that we trust them.
If that's the case, then any land dragon still around should return to us. I can't believe I'm saying this, Queen Mother, but I was wrong. I'm sorry to have ever doubted you. There's no need for an apology, Ashanti.
Batari smiled at her top archer.
It's good to have a skeptic around. Makes me always take a step back, reevaluate my decisions every step of the way. And that's the best thing you can do as a leader. So, what happens now?
Mira questioned.
Now we wait. With any luck, the land dragons will flock back to this spot anywhere between the next hour to the next sun cycle.
I suppose we should try and build a shelter then. If we really do have to stay out here for an entire day, I don't want to be sleeping on a crooked branch all night.
If that's what you wish. Ashanti and I have trained ourselves to sleep atop our Mirax, though I'd imagine you and your friends couldn't really do the same.
Not unless we learn how to sleep sitting up. Besides, we don't have enough Mirax for everybody anyway. Unless we pack Kandara onto one of yours, she's gonna be shit out of luck.
Speaking of Kandara...
Mira looked to the sky.
Where is she?
Swa'er?
I asked the Wind Dragon telepathically.
What's the holdup with Kandara? Surely she must have heard the horn by now and realized we found what we're looking for.
I can see her,
Swa'er noted as he glanced upward.
But I have no idea what she's doing. The butterfly lady's just hovering up in the sky and staring off into the distance.
Try to bring her down. Now I'm kind of worried about her.
Swa'er gave me a soft nod before he slithered up into the sky, and about 2 minutes later he returned with Kandara in his company. The beautiful golden-haired butterfly woman looked like she'd seen a ghost. The color was completely drained from her face, and her mouth hung open as if she wished to speak, but couldn't. Kandara, I gasped as I ran out to the green-winged woman. What's wrong?
There's something you need to see,
was all the morpho woman could sputter.
Something you'll have to climb up to the top to witness.
I was a bit confused, but I wasn't going to argue with the obviously frazzled woman. So I looked up at the branch above me, hopped up to grab it, and then hoisted myself onto it. I continued the process for another 15 minutes or so until I reached the top layer of branches. I made sure to have a firm foothold as I grabbed onto two nearby limbs and poked my head out through the foliage of the cloudbrush tree. But the savannah appeared to be safe. Nothing more than a few wild animal herds spread out across the plains. When I turned around to face the shore of the island, however, my jaw hit the floor. Off in the distance, all the way back near where the ocean met the skyline, were ships. Lots and lots of fucking ships. I counted at least 20 in total, and it didn't take a rocket scientist to figure out who they were or what they wanted either. This was a fleet of orcs, headed to the Chero Island in the hopes of getting their grubby mitts on a dragon. Holy fuck. If the Great Horn of Ivory actually worked, this land would soon be swarming with massive, deadly dragons. Which meant we'd just rung the fucking dinner bell for the orcs.